Hello, everybody. This is Dane Gentry on the Standing Back Up podcast. Today, I'm here with Miss Dana S. Diaz. She's the author of the best-selling book, Gasping for Air, The Stranglehold of Narcissistic Abuse. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. So tell us all about you. How'd you get into the, how'd you write this book?
Oh, it's a long story. But the short version is that I was abused as a child. I was abused in a 25-year-long marriage. And at the end of that, I just had to keep a journal. I mean, there's no making anything nice out of what it was. My life was on the line. He was threatening to kill me. He was telling people he was planning to kill me. And how we got to that point is beyond me. But apparently this is how narcissists work. So, unfortunately, we were right at the beginning of the shelter in place during COVID. So I started keeping a journal and just a plain old notebook that was from the end of my son's previous school year, just ripped out the pages that were used because it was unsuspecting. And I would just start documenting basically, you know, just in case something did happen to me, for some, you know, somebody to hopefully find it and know who done it basically. So I had moved down to my basement. I kept this journal underneath the couch cushion down there so that, you know, hopefully he wouldn't find it. And once it was all over, even after the divorce, there were two more incidents of domestic violence, but I am still standing. I'm still here. And I decided that, you know, I think that people could, you know, I hate to say too many people could relate to the experience. And I wanted people to understand what narcissistic abuse looks like from the outside versus what it is from the inside, because out in the world, he's got his arm around me. We're laughing. We're pretending we're the perfect couple, smiling and joking, and everything's great. And behind closed doors, the man wanted me dead.
That is unreal. Did the abuse just start out of nowhere, or was it like a...
Narcissists are very, they have a way, a method about them. They're, you know, like, I think people think that, like, I went out on the street and I found Chucky and like I said, hey, baby, the butcher knife turns me on. No, that's not how it normally works.
Right.
You know, like even Ted Bundy, the serial killer. I mean, he was charming and handsome, wasn't
right.
he? That's how narcissists work. So yeah, that's the funny thing is that the first time I met him, all the alarms were going off in my head. Absolutely. I knew something wasn't right. Something was off. He seemed aloof, arrogant, entitled. And this was no Brad Pitt or anything. I mean, there was right. no reason. He had no status or wealth of any kind to back it up. So I'm kind of like, who is this guy? Like, why right. is he, you know, who does he think he is? Well, he thought he was, you know, entitled. He was looking for somebody to basically provide him servitude and exalt him. Because the reality is that narcissists don't feel good about themselves. So
okay.
even though they are, you know, seeking this admiration and seeking this praise, it's because they truly inside don't have the self-esteem themselves. They don't have the ego we think they do.
Right.
Now, I'll back this up and say, we're talking about malignant narcissists here, narcissists who will use and then act any type of abuse to
okay.
get, you know, to basically isolate and control their victim so that they basically have this person all to themselves, like their private cheerleader, so to speak. I am not talking about the narcissists that are on social media taking selfies, because honestly, they look as good as they think they do. We cannot hate on them for that, but that is truly what the word narcissist comes from. Narcissus
okay.
was a Greek god who had admired his reflection in the water because he looked so good. So, the, you know, those people, they might be annoying, you know, or whatever, but they're not harming anybody.
Right.
I'm talking about the what we call malignant narcissists. I say they're like malignant tumors in your body. They're going to cause you problems. They might even kill you. You got to get rid of them.
That's unreal. I wonder if... like there's a lot of women who are abused. And I just wonder if they're dealing with that. I wonder if that's what it is, if it's a narcissistic form or what, because we hear the word a lot. And I hear it a lot.
Yes.
When I
we
was in
hear
addiction,
this a lot. Yeah.
In addiction, I was told, you know, I was narcissistic, but I never was that. I never have abused a woman, never would do any things like that. But I think maybe the controlling, maybe, you know, where I wanted her to be just in my world, just because I was hiding my life, maybe. But I just wonder if it's a,
here's, I'm sorry to interrupt. Here's where I'm gonna stop you on that, though, is that this is the stuff that ticks me off about people running around using this word narcissist so loosely. Because if you go to the doctor with a sore throat, maybe a sniffly nose, it could be COVID, it could be strep throat, it could be bronchitis, it could be how many different things. Just because you have a quality of something, we all have narcissistic qualities. I advocate against narcissism, but let's be real. There are things I do that can be narcissistic. Okay. That doesn't mean I'm a narcissist. Right. You know what I mean? Okay. So there's a difference between being so self-serving that you are so much more important than everybody else, that you have no remorse and no empathy and just don't give a crap, versus, okay, I'm a little, like for me, I was abused as a child, made me a little hypervigilant, made me a little anxious. So I know I can stop myself when I'm being a little controlling or bossy. Right. But it's not that I'm trying to control people. I'm trying to control my environment so I feel safe.
Gotcha.
You know, military people, they've got PTSD, very similar. Some victims of narcissistic abuse often had PTSD. There's different things that you do in life that make you look like one thing or another, but you aren't defined by that. But the one thing I will go back to is that a true narcissist is somebody who lacks no remorse, or who lacks remorse and has no empathy. And they truly, I mean, with every fiber in their being, feel justified treating whoever, how they're treating them. And they truly feel like they are doing nothing wrong. And I mean, it's almost a delusional thing, but it's psychotic and it's antisocial. And, you know, to say that somebody is narcissistic is a whole other thing, because it is called a personality disorder, but I challenge anybody who knows a real narcissist to get them to go to the doctor to get diagnosed, because they have a real issue with any kind of mental health label. They tell you you're the crazy one. It's you. It's always you. Everything's your fault. You don't know what you're talking about. You're crazy. You're delusional. This is why they gaslight. You know, they want to reflect everything off of them. They don't know how to take accountability for their own actions, and they will never be sorry. So to get somebody like that to be willing enough to even go and even have a session with a therapist or any kind of psychiatrist, it is very far-fetched. However, anybody that has dealt with a real narcissist, a true narcissist that is abusive, will tell you, yes, every person you see on like 48 Hours or these true crime shows, these are narcissists. According to latest statistics, over 20-some% of the male U.S. prison population are narcissists. I would argue it's more, because oftentimes they feel like they're above the law even. The law doesn't apply to them. They can do whatever they want because they're justified. But I don't want to pick on men, because let me tell you, women are nasty and women are just as narcissistic as men are. And there are many men who have come forward to me. Some, I was talking about the military. I've had a few actually that are former military. I mean, these are badass guys that have served in wars, that have come back and have endured narcissistic abuse by a female partner.
Well, I saw a guy talking about it, talking about the signs of a female, but I think that you're right too on the prison population, because you know, I was there, we know of my past or whatever. And so, there is a lot of people in there who feel that they are above the law, and it was the cop's fault that they were arrested and they weren't doing anything wrong. I'm not
it
one
wasn't
of them.
Them.
Yeah. I'm not
it's
one
not
of them
their
guys.
Fault.
Trust me. Every time they arrested me, they had a good reason to, you know, I'm not one of those people, but, they never come looking for me for no reason. I'll say that, but there is a lot of people that way. But I see people, I think more and more in everyday life. Again, you know, we can't say that they're all out narcissistic, but man, they just sure do have the behaviors, you know, in the world. It seems like the world we're living in today.
I agree with you. I feel like we're seeing it more. I mean, I hate to blame social media, but I mean, let's be real. Facebook. Yeah. I mean, what did it start with? MySpace back in the 90s or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we have Facebook and all this. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. Give me validation. Praise me. Admire me. It's annoying. I mean, I hated even going on social media after I released my book because I felt that alone was narcissistic. Like, look at me. I'm going to put, you know, because who puts bad stuff about themselves? Nobody says, God, I'm a piece of crap. Look what I did to this person today. Or I said this horrible thing. It's all like, look at my kids. We're all stars. Everybody's great. No. It's a terrible, terrible thing that people are now so egotistical that they think that that's how, you know, that gives them their sense of worth is how many followers and how many likes and how many comments. But I will praise you for this. I don't know you. I just met you. But the fact that you actually can say, like, yeah, you know what? I did stuff. They arrested me. I'm accountable. I can tell you you're not a narcissist.
Right.
Because that's my true test for it. It's a very simple thing. If you ask yourself, am I a narcissist? If you are worried that you might be, you're not a narcissist, because a narcissist would immediately react by reflecting that off and say, oh, how dare you call me a you're the narcissist.
Right.
They wouldn't even entertain it.
Yeah, that's true. I've always done that too. You know, I knew I was doing wrong, you know, and I'm sure there was
times. Well, everybody does. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And then, you know, I learned, especially in recovery, that's one thing that you have to do. You have to find accountability, because if you don't, you're just spinning your wheels and you're not getting anywhere. You're not growing. You're not getting healthy. And so that's good that I'm not, because had I been narcissist, I probably would still be using, because I wouldn't have went.
Yeah.
And got help, mental help, you know, because I was always kind of scared of that too. I didn't want to go, because the side of that I saw was people getting heavily medicated and sleeping yes. all the time. And it was just like, man, you know, I didn't want to deal with that. So I'm glad that I'm not, but I do hold myself completely accountable. I mean, no, it wasn't the way I was raised. It wasn't any of these things. It was the choices that I chose to make.
Well, and that's the thing, and we all have choices, but I've said this to my son a million times, but I say it in this realm of abuse too. Good people do bad things and bad people do good things, but what you do shouldn't define you. I mean, certainly I'm one of these actions speak louder than words people, but I mean, I think if you can just say, you know what, I screwed up. I might have screwed up a lot. I might have screwed up too many times and for too long, but if I can take accountability and say, this isn't who I want to be, I know I'm better than that, and move forward and try just every day to be a little bit better. That's all you can do. And that's all anybody can ask of you. You know, the problem in this world is the people who don't do that or don't even care that, you know, they're harming other people by the choices they're making and harming themselves, because that's a level of self-respect, you know, that, I mean, I've been there. I mean, staying in an abusive situation, you know, that I had a choice to leave, that's almost abuse in itself. I mean, talk about self-sabotage, but you know, we all make our choices and we either suffer or don't from them. And, you know, all we can do is be better next time. It's all we can do.
That's it. You're right. And that's what I do every day. You know, we were just talking about, we were eating lunch and I said, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm making it all about me, but man, it sure does feel good to be me today. And that's the truth, because, you know, what really, when I started getting sober, I said, this is what I said. It was kind of a revelation I had. I wanted somebody to say something good at my funeral, to be honest about it. And I was like, if I was to die today, then wouldn't nobody have a whole lot of good things to say about me? And that's understandable because of the way I lived. And so that's kind of my goal in life. You know, I want people to respect me as a good person. When they say my name, I want it to be something good behind it versus, I mean, he's just a junkie, you know, never going to be anything. And so many people just don't care. As you said, you know, they don't care. And that's the label that you get. And it's like you kind of get in a cycle that you don't want to get out of, whether it be if you're homeless or whatever. You know, a lot of them people are out there and they just won't try. Because at the end of the day, that's all you got to do. You got to try. You know, I used to always say, I can't, I can't, I can't. But that's why I couldn't, because I always said that I couldn't. But then I woke up and said, hey, man, you know what? I can, because I'm intelligent. I'm all these different things. And I was wasting my life away. And I knew I could do so much better in life. And so that was kind of the realization I had. And here we are today. And how long were you in the relationship that was when you dealt with the abuse?
Well, childhood, obviously, I was 18 and I was out. But yeah, at 25 years, I was with my ex, you know, and I knew what it was and I knew what I was in. But, you know, this speaks to even what you were just saying. I think that when the narrative about you, the narrative around you is always can't, won't, never, you know, all this negativity. How are you supposed to be better? How are you supposed to know that you're better? Because I was kind of in that same situation. I was unfortunately born to a mother that didn't want me, wasn't shy about telling me and repeating that. And to this day, I'm 48 years old and we don't even have contact and I still hear about it from other people. She just completely invalidates my existence. But she married a man, talk about a narcissist. He's the king of all of them. And that was rough because he did physically abuse me, but he physically abused me because he was verbally abusing me. I was getting every day the nobody ever wanted you. You shouldn't have been born. You're never going to do this. You know, I was on honor roll, but it wasn't good enough. I was stupid. I was incompetent. I was this overachieving kid. Like I was the straightest arrow, never smoked a day in my life, never did a drug. I didn't even drink. I had one drink once at a party in high school because I thought I should, because isn't that what kids do? Yeah. And I called a cab to go home because it wasn't my thing. Like they couldn't have asked for, I mean, did I screw up and make mistakes? Yeah, I was still a kid, but nothing made, you know, so I didn't understand. And I tried and tried to be more and better, but I came to the point where I'm like, I could win the Nobel Peace Prize. And he would still say, oh, well, you didn't win two of them. Like nothing was ever going to be enough. So, I mean, from a very early age, I was never enough. I was never enough. And part of me inside, like I was tenacious. I think I still am. I'm a little fiery. I get riled up. Yeah. But I would speak up to him. I was a tiny little peanut of a thing. But that's when the physical abuse would start. And so over time, you know, I didn't want to get hurt. So I learned to just keep my mouth shut. And my mother was standing there telling me, well, if you didn't provoke him, he says you're lying to get attention. I don't think that ever happened. I didn't just see that, even though it happened 10 feet away from me. I don't know what you're talking about. So it's no wonder I ended up with somebody, you know, who also abused me. The difference was there's different types of narcissists. And my stepfather was the very overt one. He's the one people typically think of a narcissist. He's going to tell you how great he is. And look at all the stuff I have. He was your typical, had to have the best. If somebody bought a TV, he had to go buy one an inch bigger just so he had the bigger and the best, you know, and if you had something, he was going to get 10 of them. And, you know, one of these people, and it was overbearing. But my ex that I wrote the book about, he was what we call a covert narcissist. So it was a true love-hate relationship. As long as I was following his rules and he approved of me, which basically meant if I was serving his needs, then everything was good. And he loved me. And I don't even know if it was real, honestly, looking back, but it seemed real. But boy, if I did something he didn't like, or I provoked his anger or whatever, stuff got very real. But you know, kind of going back to what you said before, you know, from point A to point B, I would have never guessed that we would have gotten to where we're like knives and guns and the cops are being called and all this stuff, because the first thing that happened was just a few weeks into the relationship, he got mad. He got really mad, overreacted, and threw a CD, like just flung it across the room at my face, like, you know, like a Frisbee. And it didn't hit my face. I moved. But, you know, that was like, I came from a childhood of this. Like, I'm done. I'm out. But it was, I'm sorry. It'll never happen again. I just, you know, and here's me. Maybe he had a bad day. Maybe, you know, I'm trying to enable it and excuse it. And the thing is that he knew he got away with that. So the next time it was a little worse. Just a little more unsettling, but not enough to be a deal breaker. And just every time I tell people it's like gaining weight. You look 10 years and you're like, how did I put on 10 pounds? You know, well, because it adds on. It's not noticeable. Same thing with narcissistic abuse. You know, it's just all these things are happening. And when you look back, you're like, how the hell did we get from throwing a CD across the room to you're shooting guns and wanting me dead? This is getting crazy. But this is it's a very real existence for a lot of people, men and women. Women are statistically more prone to it. You know, we could talk about the reasons why I think it's just traditional roles. Women are right. generally smaller and I don't know, meeker or whatever. I know for me, a big one was that once we had a child together, I mean, I just wanted some peace for the sake of my kids. So it was like, just fine. I'll submit. I'll do whatever, you know, just, and it wasn't that I was weak, but you know, I just wanted some sanity for us and I wanted some normalcy for our son. But for men, it can get a little worse because, you know, women have things they can do like getting pregnant on purpose, you know, stealing money from accounts or, you know, things like that. There's, you know, a lot of financial abuse, legal abuse, sexual abuse. There's so many different ways that people manipulate each other. And it's really terrible that they think that's okay.
Yeah, you see it so much. I grew up, I don't know if it's narcissistic or whatever, but most of the people that I was around, the men beat on the women. I don't know. It wasn't in my family, but my mother was an alcoholic. And so the men that were around and drug addict as well. But I saw her beat a lot as a little child, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old. And but all the people that I was around, the older people, it was like a normal thing with them. It was like, but I always knew it was wrong and never in a million years would I have done that. You know, that's women and children, you know, that's, you don't do that. And so, in my mind, I'm thinking as you're talking, thinking, man, there has to be something wrong with a guy, a man who wants to submit a woman to that kind of abuse. I just don't get it. I don't understand what you would be getting from it. Let me say it that way. Like, what is, you know, are you so down on yourself or whatever that you have to do that to feel better? And as you said earlier on, that's what it was with him. Like, he didn't have anything going on, didn't have this. And so he was doing it as a way of, I guess, trying to feel bigger or whatever. But I still don't understand how a man can beat a woman and make them feel bigger.
Well, and the thing is, it's not even beating. It's just because, honestly, my ex never laid a hand on me. I mean, okay. He swung a crowbar at my head. Prescription medication incident where he dragged me on the bathroom floor, left me there hoping I would die. I mean, there were a multitude of incidents. I always said it's like he was trying to get rid of me without getting his hands dirty, right. Literally. Mm-hmm. But it was tricky. But there are a lot of men, narcissists, that do use physical force. I mean, the physical threat was always there for me. Right. I mean, he even kept a really nasty knife right next to him. And I always said it felt like a shock collar that you put on a dog because it was always next to him that I knew if I spoke out of line or did something out of line, I wasn't sure if he was going to use it on me or not. So, you know, it doesn't have to be the physical thing, but my issue with people, and it's not just man to woman, it's woman to man too, because I'm going to tell you what, women can be nasty, and am one, but my God, the things that people do to each other, people like you and I, we are empathetic. We wouldn't want to, you know, I mean, have we hurt people? Yes. Have we caused harm? Yes. But I don't think we did it intentionally or we knew it was wrong. These people, their moral compass is kind of skewed because they absolutely feel that they are right to do this. Why they do it, it depends on their personal reason. I can only speak to my ex. Mm-hmm. My ex, I kind of had a sense early on. He always talked about he wanted a house, but he didn't make enough money and he didn't have the education to get a better job. Here I was going to DePaul University in Chicago, studying journalism, studying psychology. I was like, I'm going to be the next Barbara Walters. And, you know, like I was like, I had my sights set real high and I'm going to go to New York City and see what. And I think that he also, and here's where it's kind of amusing to me. He also saw my narcissistic stepfather who's like, look at my Corvette and look at the car I drive and look at my house and look at my watch and look at my clothes. And I think I absolutely, with everything in my body, feel that my ex saw an opportunity. Okay. I think he thought if he wooed me and got me, locked me down, and maybe even at some point, I think he thought if he rid of me, that he would be entitled to whatever things or money or resource that I could be. because the thing was, is that once I graduated from college, I did actually get a promotion where I was already working. It was in real estate property management, but I was making very, very good money, a very nice salary, right out of college. And boy, it didn't take long after that for him to put a ring on my finger. But you know what he did within 5 minutes of proposing? He pulled me aside and he said, "We're not getting married until I get a house." So, and you know what? And here's me thinking, okay, that's fine. And I went and took my salary and we bought him a house and then I got my wedding. So it was very transactional, but it just kept going and going. Oh, well, I'm never going to have this and I'm never going to have that. And I want this guy to be happy. So maybe he'd be happy with me. So maybe if I was resourceful and got him the, you want a dirt bike? I'll get you a dirt bike. I bought him a dirt bike like that day. Like, I have some cash over here. I have some extra money. Oh, he wanted a boat. Well, I'm going to have to save up a little for that. But we got a boat. Then we got the four-wheeler. Then we got the farm. Then we got the this and the that and the other thing. And, you know, and like it never ended. It was never enough. What did Dana get?
Nothing. Abuse.
Once in a while, I got what seemed to be love, but I think it was just a show.
Yeah. Did he know about your stepfather, about the abuse you went through with him?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I wasn't shy about it. I mean, honestly, I remember the first night we hung out, you know, and he was like, "Oh, sounds like a dick." I said, "Yes, as a matter of fact, he is the biggest one ever."
And the whole time knowing he's fixing to be the same exact way.
But he saw that. And that's the thing about narcissists. They know exactly what they're doing. They know who you are. He saw a vulnerable girl. Yeah. He knew that I was so desperate. I came out of a house where two parents and even my mother rejected me. She wasn't affectionate. She didn't soothe me. She didn't nurture me. Yeah. I didn't even get food a lot of the time. She just gave me $50 a week and said, go feed yourself. So I just wanted anybody to show any kind of attention or affection to me. And he did. He knew what to do. It was enough. Yeah. He knew how to play me and it was enough for me. And it's sad, but you know, it, and the sadder thing is that I would have stayed if it wasn't a matter of him, you know, destroying my health with, you know, having to live in that constant state of fear. Cause by the end of our marriage and actually the reason, sadly, it wasn't all the other things going on that were making me, motivating me to leave. It was when my health deteriorated very rapidly. Within two weeks, I dropped to 93 skeletal pounds, test after test after test, couldn't figure out what was wrong. After a year of testing, Mayo Clinic finally figured out that I had so much of the cortisol, the stress hormone running through me, that I became autoimmune because my white blood cells thought it had to fight, like eradicate some disease that they killed themselves off. So I was having autoimmune reactions and I developed a lung disease that's like having COPD and fibromyalgia all at once. So my body was in total havoc. I had a backpack oxygen machine. My doctor sat me down at the end of 2019 and said, "Your organs are shutting down, your digestive system, your lungs, your heart, your muscles, your brain, everything is shutting down. You are barely alive." And it was because of the stress of living that in that circumstance.
That is terrible. I read that. I read that on your profile about all that. And I was thinking about it the whole time thinking, man, you know, someone like her who has no medical problems and just from the stress of a husband doing that way and having to live that way. That's awful. I wonder when you say that, I wonder how many women or men too go to the doctor and have all these problems, but they're not telling the doctor what's really going on.
And I didn't tell the doctor what was really going on. And that was the thing. But I don't know. I think that's part of the problem. You know, I mean, there's issues with our justice system, but there's issues with our medical system too, because nobody stopped to say, the first few doctors were like, maybe you have anxiety. I have a little anxiety. You know, it could be stress. It could be, and some just literally threw their hands up. Two called me a hypochondriac. Test after test. I mean, but nobody stopped and said, "Is there something going on that's causing you this?" It wasn't until after I was diagnosed that doctor, and I'll never forget him. I mean, I actually go back and see him every once in a while just to give him a hug. But he said, you know, I've seen this before and I don't know what's causing you stress, but I think it's something in your life and you need to consider what it is in your life that's doing this to you. And you need to be done with it. Whatever it is, it needs to go. And I immediately knew what it was. And I didn't tell him until after, because when you're a victim of abuse, you're terrified.
Yeah.
You know, you're absolutely terrified, but that's why a lot of these people get away with it too.
Yeah. It's the same thing. Like when they harm children, the same thing. I had a lady I was talking about that, the abuse she dealt with as a kid. And she didn't want to tell anybody because she felt that everybody would be pointing the finger at her and all these different things. And
that's exactly what happened to me.
Yeah.
I see as child services, the police. It was, oh, well, she's difficult. She self-inflicted those wounds. Oh, I strangled myself. These are my hand marks on my neck. It was me. And I was just like, you know what? And we wonder why I have trust issues. We wonder why, you know, I couldn't trust anybody. And even my great grandma, she was one of the very few people I trusted and loved me in this world. God rest her soul. But she had always said, even when I would go to her as a kid and kind of hint at like there's stuff going on, she would just say, you just need to take care of yourself. Nobody in this world is going to take care of you but you. And that is how it had to be. And it's sad to me that because, you know, people say, oh, you're so strong. You're so that I didn't ask to be strong. I just wanted a mother who loved me a little bit. I would have taken a little bit. I wanted to be married to somebody who, even if he just liked me a little, he didn't have to be in love with me forever. And it's just sad that somebody like me is just like, I'll just take whatever. Like, I don't even need that much, just something. And I couldn't even get that.
That's terrible. You know, I couldn't imagine, you know, I said my mother was alcoholic, but she still loved me, you know, and still
did the best
that she could. It was me and my brother, and she did the best that she could. She was sick, you know, and that's just how it was. Yeah. And she's passed away now, but again, still, there was love there. I mean, there was times where I didn't have food to eat and things like that, or was locked out of my house for days because she would be gone, things like that. But, you know, I finally dealt with all them things. My wife is the reason I did, really. We were just talking. I never would tell anybody about those stories either. And we were talking about it. She's like, you got to deal with that. You know what I mean? You got to. And then I would feel like people were attacking my mother. And I'd be like, hold on, I don't want it to be that way. But, you know, at the end of the day, she dropped the ball on a few things, man. You know, but we're only human and these things happen. But I can't imagine. Was your grandmother the same way as your mother? Did she not have any? Did she like the same way? Was she not nurturing either?
My grandma, she is now with me. But back then, no. But I didn't know as a kid. I didn't know until I was adult that basically she was married to an alcoholic. Okay. You want to talk about a narcissist. He would bring women home and have sex right in front of her. And you know, he was violent. And yeah, there was a lot going on. And so like, it's definitely, this is how stuff gets passed through generations. This is why my mother thought that, you know, she was getting a good deal, that she was with a guy that was an ass, but he didn't hit her, you know, so it was better. It was okay. She had food to eat. Because that was the one thing she always said to me as a kid, you should just be glad you have a bed. Well, I didn't always have a bed, but you know, that you have a roof over your head and you have clothes and, you know, we're providing you with things. She felt like that was their obligation. Like I should just be happy I was provided with that. And I'm grateful. You're right. You know, I've heard many people are so affected by having alcoholic parents, and I don't minimize that, but I still think that when you grow up, what you choose to do with your own children, hopefully you learn from the mistakes that your parents made, you know, for whatever reason. Maybe they didn't know better. Maybe they were sick, whatever it was, but I'm done with it. I'm that cycle breaker because there were many women in the family that I saw, and my stepfather too. He was actually, he and his siblings were abandoned as children. He was only a baby. Both parents just split, and they were put into foster care, separated into five different homes. So I understand that they didn't know any better, but to choose to mistreat me, because when they had a child together, if my brother was standing here right now, he would tell you that he has the best parents a kid could ever have.
You're kidding.
Not at all.
Why is that? Well, I mean, they just...
I was the scapegoat. It's a typical scapegoat golden child. Anyone with child trauma, I would recommend to you, there's a book that I think it was released back in 1991. It's called A Child Called It. And forgive me, I don't remember the author's name, but it's called A Child Called It. It is so horrifying. There's even parts of it that I've had trouble with, and I have reread it multiple times. It's one of the worst cases of child abuse in California history. But the interesting thing was, this was the third son to this couple. The dad knew that this abuse was happening only to the one child, not to the others. They even went on to have more children that were not abused, just the one. And not for any particular reason, but the mother just, I mean, the things she would do to this poor child, the kids, the other kids saw it happening and just, they were so unfazed by it is what's so startling. Dad saw it happening. It was just like, kind of like my mom. Well, try not to upset her. Hopefully it won't be too bad today. Sorry. I'm going to take the other ones out for ice cream while your mother burns your, you know, head on the stove or whatever else she did. It's so horrific, but I have found that it's not that uncommon either, that sometimes parents just pick a kid that they just don't want to amount to anything. And that child is just going to suffer for what they are not willing to face themselves. Because I think when it comes down to it, most abusers, I dare to say, are really just not willing to face their own unhealed issues. They have trauma. They have things that they should be dealing with, but they don't. They choose not to. They just want to put it on somebody else and say, here, carry my shame, carry my guilt, carry my regret and resentment and everything else for me. And that's how I have felt in my life. And I have had multiple people do it. But then 3 years ago, once I was done with my marriage, I was done with him. I was done with them, my parents. There was somebody else that surfaced, a friend of 16 years that I never in a million years thought would turn on me. And well, that's another book that'll be coming out next year. But it is amazing to me that once you remove yourself from that toxicity, that you can really grow and bloom. It's kind of like what we were saying before. Once you get away from all those people that say you can't, you won't, you never, because you believe it, whether you want to or not, you internalize it. You feel that, you know, you're like, who am I kidding? I'm never going to this. I'm never going to that. But once you start getting around the people who, like, I always joke that when I would go to church, I think like the little old ladies there thought I was a much better person than what I really am, because if they heard the thoughts in my mind, they'd probably curse me to hell. But I love that because I want to be better. I want to be who they think I am. And I want to be with people who challenge me to be that better person. You know, there are days I know I'm not this Dana that everyone sees where my husband is just like, you know, I'll tell him, oh, stay away from me. It's not a good day. And he's like, I know, I don't like you today either, but I still love you. And I love that lesson that he doesn't react to it, but he still smiles and he laughs and he treats me just the same. And I come out of the mood and everything's good. Because really, we can't all be perfect. I think we're hard on ourselves, especially when we've had situations in the past that we kind of beat ourselves up. But we got to stop doing that and start looking at who we really are. Like you said, you know, I'm smart. I'm this. And I kind of had that moment too, where I was like, you know, the embers are still burning in there. Like, it, you know, it's not a raging fire, but like, I know that I have more in me. This is this life that I have let this person dictate for me is not what I wanted. And it's not who I am. And it's not, you know, like I want more than this. I want to do what's in my heart. And I think once you do that and you realize, oh, you know, like I can be more and I am able to do this and I can achieve. Stop letting the naysayers determine who you are. You decide who you're going to be. Because you know what? I've only been out of my other marriage 3.5 years. I would have never in a million years thought that, you know, he brought me out to Podunk, USA, middle of cornfields. Like, who, you know, he had me scrubbing toilets for work when I have a college degree. I'm not saying like, oh, look at me, I have a college degree.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah.
We got Walmart and a gas station. Like, I have to drive to Walmart. Like, you know, yeah. It's not even close. But, you know, like there's nothing and nobody. And so I'm scrubbing toilets. Who would have thought that I would go to, from that to I published a book and people are actually buying it and reading it and following me on social media. And I've written two more books that'll be released within the next year. And I mean, I'm on podcasts like all over the world and people are listening to what I'm saying. Like, why? Who would have thought that? Like, it's so surreal. But I go back to, it's not because, oh, look at me, I'm so great, but look at how far you have come. Look at how far I have come. It's not that we're better than anyone else. It's that we are living to our true potential. We have a purpose. We are living it. We are inspiring others. We are motivating people. We are sharing information. We're not just settled living that life that other people said we would live. Because if that was the case, then I would probably be dead right now or still scrubbing toilets and miserable with a backpack oxygen unit on my back.
And that's horrible. That's horrible that it took you down that far. But this is a story. I have a lot of women that listen, it seems like. And I wanted more women to come on my shows because I wanted the other side of it because we hear the men's side. But this is huge. I think this is probably going to be one of my better ones because there's a lot of women, I think, that deal with it in silence. And
yes,
that's what we don't want. I mean, you're not going to get out of it if you're dealing with it inside, or you're going to end up dead. Just like you don't, like you said, it doesn't have to be physical abuse to kill you.
No. You're living, and they don't have to touch you to kill you.
Yeah.
That's, he was, that's killing. The sad part.
Can I ask, did he ever get help for himself, or is he still the same, or is he
No, as a matter of fact, it's funny. After everything, he emailed me and said that I'm the narcissist and I need help.
Of course.
I'm like, okay.
And he's still going, and he's still going nowhere fast in life, I guess, I'm sure.
You know, he intentionally bought a house using my income, our tax records. And it's not very far. It's actually eerily close. And he has a woman living with him and she has two daughters. And you know what though? God love him. Because here's the thing. I have said this a million times. Maybe they're meant to be. Maybe they'll work. Maybe they'll last longer. He and I were like oil and water. It just wasn't going to work. But there's maybe somebody for everybody, because there are, and I'm going to say this, and people aren't going to like it, but it's the truth. There are women and also men. It goes, like I said, it goes both ways. I'm just speaking on behalf of, you know, like my situation. There are women that are fine being with a man that controls them and dictates everything and acts abuse when he would like, because sometimes culturally there are cultures. I mean, I look at even like my book sales or podcasts, and there are countries where zero, nothing.
Wow. Okay.
Because culturally the men are expected somewhat to fill that role that way. You know, geographical differences, you know, we talk about like where we, how we grew up. I mean, I have siblings by my biological father. They were raised very nicely with two parents who loved them, wanted them, encouraged them, you know, did everything. Let me tell you, my sister would have never, the second that, if she had been with my ex, the second that CD went flying across the room, she would have been like, no, sir, peace out. I'm done. She would never have tolerated the disrespect that, you know, so I was able to tolerate more because of what I had been through before. Just like my mother, she is still in it. They have been married, 40 years. And she chose him over me when it came down to it. She told me she can't be my mother and his wife all at the same time. And she chooses that.
I know what that feels like.
Well,
Yeah. My mother chose a guy over me too. In a sense, not that way, not as bad as horrible as that, but in the same sense, you know what I mean? But again, I have to say I had my faults in that as well. This was as I was grown and was messing up, and he didn't want me around. And she said, he doesn't want you around. I don't want you around. So But at the end of the day, I had my faults in it. You know, still, yes, she was my mother, but you know, it is what it is. When did you release your first book? How long ago was that?
It was last June. So less than a year ago. And it has done very well, which is kind of bittersweet because of course I wanted it to, because I put 3.5 years of my life into it. And you know, I'm glad that it's resonating with people, but at the same time, I don't want anyone to know what it's like. I don't like getting messages that say everything you said is literally the life I am living. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to know that other people are going through it, but I'm glad to let them know that they're not alone and that there is a magnificent life on the other side of it, because that's the happy ending.
Yeah. And it is. And that's for anyone. You know, I have a lot of people in recovery that listen or who are not in recovery are trying to get there. And that's what I want them all to understand. Man, there's so much of a better life out here than it is. Yeah. No matter. And it's not about, you know, success is different for people. You know, your idea of success is whatever, and my idea is whatever. And so whatever your idea is, it's there for you. Yes. You can go get it, but you're not going to get it stuck in whatever it is that you're stuck in. That's what I can promise you. You're not going to get, like I said a while ago, you're going nowhere fast. And I did that for a long time. And I look at it now as I think I get in a hurry sometimes because I feel like I've wasted so much of my life. And it's like, still need to slow down a little bit, you know, don't go too fast, but it's there for you. But you just have to, you know, if I'm a man of faith. And so that's the big thing for me. And that's what did it for me. I finally surrendered to him, and that's what we have to do. And we do all these things, and life is amazing. And my life today is amazing. And it's just getting so much better every day. And that's what I want people to understand and know. No matter what you're going in, first of all, you got to get out of it. And that's the thing, because you're going to die either way. No matter what we're talking about, what you went through, or what I went through, and so many other things people go through, you're going to die. You know, I say it all the time. Drugs have never been any good, but they're really not any good now. You know, someone dies every 5 minutes, and that's what I was. I was an opiate guy, so fentanyl was the thing. Yeah, and so, you know, it wasn't that way early on. I started with pills. I had an accident when I was 11. I got hit by a truck walking home from school. It almost took me out, but I made it through it, and then I had an ear surgery when I was 15, and they gave me an opioid pain pill. And the rest is history. And it went from there. And then I don't know if I've ever said this on a video podcast, but I will now. I've said it on a bunch of audio. I saw my mother, someone shooting her up, and when I was 17. And then here I went too. And you know, you would have thought that it went the other way. But anyway, so that's just all part of my story. But the main thing, the reason I say that is that no matter what, you can come out of it. You know, I don't care if you go to prison. I don't care what you do, because I did it and everybody can too. But you got to want it.
100%. And I appreciate you saying that, because I know in the realm of abuse, that's a big thing. People are always like, well, what can I do? What can you tell people to do? If you know somebody, there is nothing you can't tell an alcoholic, just stop drinking. No. You can't tell somebody that's addicted to drugs, just get off the drugs, just stop. It's better for you. There's no reasonable anything. You can't appeal to their emotion. They have to make the decision. They have to be ready. And honestly, I tell people, at least in my marriage, like, if you would have asked me, what's the deal breaker? What's the thing he's going to do? You know what? He had the infidelity, you know, like death threats. Apparently none of that was my deal breaker. And it's sad. It should have been, but I don't think anybody really knows what it is that's going to motivate them to make that huge change until it actually happens. Because I didn't realize it was not until the doctor was like, yeah, your body is shutting down. We need to do something fast. Otherwise, you are going to die. And I was like, oh, my God, I don't want to die. Like you just said, I was laying there that night thinking, is that it? Like, I was just here. I was used and abused. And like, I'm just going to die. And that's it. The end. And I mean, maybe that's fine for some people. But I felt like, I didn't get to live my life. I didn't get to do anything I had wanted to do. But I'm going to say this, bravo to you, by the way, but nobody is ever too old. Even if you have one day left of your life, live it authentically. Live it with purpose and intention and true to who you are and what you desire and what you're passionate about. Because that one day, it doesn't matter how many days you lived before doing whatever else you were doing, wrong, right, whatever, that one day is all that you need to make yep. that difference. It could be one word you say. It could be that one smile you offer a person that prevents them from going home and committing suicide. Yeah. It could be that one compliment you give that person that just completely turns their image of themselves around and motivates them to go do something great themselves. But we don't even need that much time. You just have to make the choice about how you want to spend your time. You know, there's another author that I met last year, and he has a whole story of his own, but he said, I decided at 80 years old that I wanted to publish one book every year. And he is 83 years old, and he has published 3 books. He has published one every year, and I have all 3 of them. So I'm waiting for this year's. Right. He has a little time. But I love that, because it is never too late to make an impact. Never.
Without a doubt. I know. I saw that your prequel, you said your prequel is coming out. When's it coming out?
Well, the prequel is actually what I'm tinkering with right now. Okay. I am, you know, it's kind of crazy with childhood stuff. I don't know if you've had this experience, but it was written, it was done, and I just keep adding to it, subtracting to it. And I am still, even as recent as a few nights ago, I woke up in the middle of the night, and I didn't even know repressed memories, but apparently there's still stuff in there that's resurfacing, and I'm like, oh, I got to get that in there. Yeah. I'm tinkering for a couple more weeks. And so hopefully by the end of the summer, we'll see that come out, and then I'll work on the sequel.
Good deal. Where can everybody find your book? Tell us that.
Amazon, anywhere you buy books online, but you can go to my website as well, danasdiaz.com. Link for the book is there, Facebook, Instagram. This podcast will be on there permanently. And I always recommend, if you know, because people ask, what can I do to help somebody I know that might be in a situation? Share this podcast. To yes. share a link, it's not confrontational. It's not accusing them or acknowledging anything. Just say, hey, this was really interesting. You might be interested in listening. Send them the link. Maybe something will resonate.
That's what I do too. I put them everywhere. And you were talking about a while ago how you go back and want to put stuff in. That's why I don't edit these shows. It's exactly why I don't do it. Because I'll go back through it and say, oh, man, I look stupid here. I did this. And so I just, when we're done, within an hour, it's going to be out everywhere. And I'm just not
going to do it.
Yeah, you know, it's just the way to do it. And so, because I would get too much and I critique myself too much. Well, Dana, thank you. I want to thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Do you go out and do any speaking? I was going to ask you that too.
I do. I have. I'm open to it. I will certainly be doing much, much more of that, you know, towards the latter half of this year and forward. But yes, if anyone wants to reach out, you can contact me by email through the website.
Awesome. That's what I'm on the road to myself, and I'm gonna get there too when I get comfortable enough. I'm getting there. But thank
you're
you for your time.
Just fine. Thank
Stay
you.
In touch and let me know when your book comes out. You got an email now, and we'll do. Thank you so much, and God bless you. And have a good
thank
rest
you.
Of your day.
You too.
All right. See you.